All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to continue to talk about the fallout, or at least the repercussions from the most recent Fed meeting and statement, mostly on the back of that statement and press conference by Jerome Powell. Except in this segment, we're going to focus a bit more on some of the currency moves, as we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. I'll include a link to that blog within the weekend show posting. Mark, before we get truly into the currency moves, I just want your quick comment regarding what we heard from the Fed in terms of the Fed statement, and then also the press conference. A lot of comments we are hearing is that the Fed and the other central banks are at peak hawkishness. That's what's drawing some of the optimism for a more risk-on trade. What do you think about that comment? Do you think we have seen peak hawkishness out of the Fed?
It's hard to say what peak hawkishness is, in the sense that the Federal Reserve is still, the market's still pricing in a strong chance, like almost 100% chance of a 50 basis point rate hike in September, followed by two 25 basis point rate hikes in Q4. So the Fed isn't done. But I think that what Powell, the takeaway that many people took from Powell is that near term, yeah, Fed's going to be raising interest rates, but Powell identified the current target as the lower end of what he called neutral. So neutral is supposed to be this rate that doesn't, it's not stimulative, nor is it depressing for the economy. It's just neutral. And so what that means then is that Powell says something like, we expeditiously moved the target rate to neutral, and we will soon be able to, we'll soon need to sort of examine how this is impacting the economy. And he also acknowledged that it takes place with a lag. So the full effect of the tightening that's already been done this year has not really fully filtered through the market, through the economy. And we still have, what the market says, another 100 basis points of tightening. So not peak in rates and the Fed policy, but I think that where that insight is valuable is if you think that Fed funds, the terminal rate, might not be far from where we finished the year, call it 3.25 to 3.5, then the 10-year yield, as I've been arguing, at 3% is good value. And I think that's what that's coming around. I mean, if you think about the rate of change from, we've dropped from almost 350 on our 10-year to like 265. The market's making this adjustment, and everybody, I think it's fine that everybody recognize the Fed's going to raise rates again, but here's what's creeping into the market. After the GDP number, after the PMI fell below 50, that boom-bust level, the market's pricing in a small chance for a rate cut by the middle of next year. And by the end of next year, the market's pricing in 50 basis points of rate cuts. So they anticipate that the Fed is, while not done, is going to be done by the end of this year.
Yeah, Mark, I think that's an important point you just made, because I think what's happened in the last couple of days is not just the Powell press conference, but it was followed up the very next day with a second quarter GDP number that was negative, which a lot of people would say, is recessionary. Of course, the government came out 2 days before it was released and changed the definition of what a recession even is, so that it's not a recession. But the reality is, it's a weakening economy. We've already seen the housing market roll over. We've already seen the labor markets get under pressure. And so a lot of people were looking forward to, yeah, the Fed may hike 50 basis points in September, and maybe they get those 225 basis point hikes November, December, but they are looking to 2023 already. It's a forward-looking market as to when will those cuts come. And to Corey's point, that liquidity that everybody wants, they're looking forward to that. So don't you think that it was really a combo punch? It was not just the Powell press conference. It was that GDP number coming out the next day and people saying, uh-oh, they're not going to be able to hike much longer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that many people expected a negative GDP print, but I sort of really would side with both Yellen and Powell and many economists. Here's the problem with like getting too carried away about recession. One, I'd say there's no definition. The U.S. never has used the two quarters of back-to-back growth. What happens is a lot of people in the market took an Econ 101 class, and what they remember from it is a rule of thumb that has no bearing on reality. Yes, the economy is weak. It's slowing down, and we might head for a contraction, for a genuine sustained contraction. But if you exclude inventories, because this is what happened. We had this huge shutdown of the economy, rebuilding the economy, reopening it, supply chain shocks. So businesses have had a very difficult time managing inventories. If you exclude inventories from the GDP numbers, both Q1 and Q2 would be positive. Powell and Yellen essentially argue that how can you have a recession when unemployment is at cyclical lows? Now, it's true that the National Bureau of Economic Research, it declares whether the U.S. is in a recession or not, typically does it with a long lag time. But there hasn't been a period in which you've had two quarters of negative growth that did not turn into a recession defined by the National Bureau of Economic Research. They want to look at not just a one sector, maybe the whatever it is, inventories, trades, production, whatever it is. They want to look at a broad measure, and they don't want to just see a small hiccup. They want to see a broader decline. And I'm not sure we're really seeing that. But I think your point is still very fair that the economy is slowing down. Powell recognized it. He talked about slowing, that the early signs of weakness in the labor market. He talked about early signs of weaker consumption and business investment. The housing data, like to your point, is rolling over, but still at very high levels of activity, levels that would be that are only like weak compared to where they've been like during this like low interest rate stimulated boom. And I say that that these are some of the best levels that we saw since the housing market bubble. And it's true, too. I think Powell was very clear. He said the economy has got to grow below trend in order to take off some of the stress on supply. So my sense is that we're headed for a recession. I'm not sure this counts for it. And the key here isn't so much how we define it. But I think the key is, will it change investors or policymakers' point of view? Will it change their behavior? And I'm not so sure. I think the consumer is already retrenching. We're going to get the consumer credit report next week. And how are consumers making ends meet? Basically going into savings, putting more borrowing on credit cards. I want to say it was the April-May period was a record use of credit cards in the U.S. And, of course, taking equity when they refinance their homes. And I think what we're going to see is a slowdown in that revolving debt, that's a credit card debt. And I think that's beginning to, then we'll begin seeing the consumer pull back. And then I think 3 months, maybe it's going to be 6 months from now, there's not going to be a debate whether the U.S. is in a recession or not. It's going to be very clear to everybody.
Okay. Yeah. So a recession is coming, and whether we say it's now or in the future, I think it is all just semantics. And well, it really just depends on how the Fed reacts to it. One thing we have to consider, too, is that after a decade of slow growth, right in around the 2% range, we had some pretty crazy shocks. 2020, the COVID crash, GDP was negative almost 3.5% that year in the US. And then in 2021, GDP was positive almost 6%. So these numbers have been all over the board, again, because of just how wild the last couple years have been. Let's talk about currencies then, Mark, because the US dollar, it was flying high. It's pulled back a little bit from those levels, but as we're recording this, in around the 106 region. Now, a little bit of weakness has crept in later on this week. Do you think the top is in for the dollar, though?
Good question. You know, the dollar index made its high middle of July, 109.30 area. I think we have to retest it. And the reason I think we have to retest it is that as slow as we've been talking about the slowing of the U.S. economy, the U.S. economic challenges, I think the market is concluding that the U.S. is still like the driest towel on the rack, that Europe is much more exposed to Russian gas, the shocks. The PMI was also below 50. And so even though U.S. rates have fallen, say European rates have fallen even further. So dollar index, primarily the euro and European currencies, I think there's a good chance that we go back and challenge the highs. Maybe we make a marginal new high, but I think this is it. This is the tail end of what I think is one of the historic dollar rallies.
Well, Mark, you also had mentioned some of the global currencies and their reactions to what their central banks are doing and what their economies are doing and what their interest rates are doing. So I'd love you to tie that together into how that may be affecting the dollar as well, some of these other highly traded currencies.
Sure. So how this pans out, I think it'll be clear next week. We're going to get the Bank of England. And remember, the Fed just hiked 75 basis points. The market had thought the Bank of England would hike rates by 50 basis points. It was more than confident of that, over 100% sure. And by that, I mean they began pricing in a small chance of a 75 basis point rate hike. But after the Federal Reserve, after local economic data, the market says maybe not so quick. The market now has scaled back the likelihood of the Bank of England rate hike, the odds of it. Now, they're now 50-50 for 50 basis points. They were 100% for 50 basis points, now 50-50. The other central bank that meets next week, the major central bank that meets next week, is Australia. And Australia, the market there had been pricing in, had been leaning to as much as 75 basis points as well. And now it's just below 50 basis points, say about 75% chance of 50 basis points. And what the market's done also in Australia, they had a slightly less than expected increase in CPI. It is still a decent retail sales report, but the market now expects that the year-end rate for Australia will be 3%. That's down 50 basis points from where it was a couple of weeks ago. But what I sort of see the markets doing on the rate side is that they say that how aggressive they thought central banks would be, and then say here in the second half, they scaled it back. Not just the Federal Reserve, but the RBA, Bank of England, even the ECB. The one bank that stays constant throughout all this, of course, is the Bank of Japan, and nobody expects them to move at all. An interesting thing happened in recent days. The Swiss National Bank issued one of their sort of a central bank's regular type of report. And in the report, they mentioned how they can act in between meetings. And the market took that to be a sign that they might act between meetings, because next week the Swiss report their CPI, their own inflation numbers. And the Euro Swiss has been on quite a run since the Swiss National Bank hiked rates by 50 basis points in June, middle of June. And the currency, the Swiss franc, I should say the euro, has weakened by 6%. Huge move on Euro Swiss. And that's because of these changing interest rate expectations and the fear that other central banks may be slower to respond, and those that are quicker to respond or respond more aggressively will be rewarded on the currencies.
So overall, then, Mark, it seems like we're seeing a general unwind in, again, some of the overly hawkish central banks. But these central banks have gotten in a number of rate hikes, some more rate hikes than people thought, and others saying that the rates still need to go higher. What's going to be important to watch as we look ahead, considering we don't have another Fed meeting for about another 8 weeks? We have the Jackson Hole press conference, but other than that, it's a bit of a quiet time for at least the Fed. Where else should we be looking for some insights into what central banks are going to do?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that the discussion sort of morphed, right? As say a month ago, 6 weeks ago, we're talking about this pendulum moving between fears of inflation and fears of recession. And I think what we're seeing is that pendulum still moving towards fear of recession. And the consequence of that, of course, is that central banks will be less aggressive. That's the instinct from getting more worried about a recession or weaker growth. So what I'm going to be watching here in the near term, of course, I agree with you. August could be quiet. There are a couple of wild cards, including the Italian election, which isn't until end of September. But people are going to be jockeying for position and forming new alliances. I think that the U.S. CPI numbers, and here I'm going to look at not just the headline, but also the core rates. And it won't surprise me to see moderating inflation here in July, when we get the reports sort of in the middle of August. Watch gasoline prices. You know, in the U.S., gasoline price has been falling every day now. I want to say for almost 2 months. And ironically, you know, when gas prices were going up, President Biden was blamed for it. And that people said that was explaining his weaker support ratings. And now that gasoline prices have fallen, Biden's support is still falling. Despite two big accomplishments, it looks like. One is the semiconductor bill to help, I think it's like $52 billion to pay profitable businesses to locate production here. And this bill that may be being worked out, a sort of a tax and spend bill that'll end up reducing the deficit. Now, two big successes, but after we get done with European politics, we'll come back to U.S. politics with the midterm election. So I'd say August, if you're going to take a vacation, it looks like August might be the best for it. But of course, when I say that, I recall that a lot of times that strange things happen in August when markets are a bit thinner.
Something to consider here. Boy, oh boy, it's been an interesting year, an interesting summer. And this week's Fed meeting, again, causing a bit of a shift in investor attitude. Who knows how long that's going to last, but we're in the middle of summer now, so thinner trading, which probably will continue. Very interesting show this week. I think we got a couple different perspectives on the situation that the Fed is in and where the markets go from here. I know it's encouraging, I think, for everybody to see markets rebound, because that happened across the board. Follow through is going to be interesting. And again, there's been so much damage done to these charts that there's a lot of room to the upside for these markets to run. Also, a lot of resistance levels for them to break through. Mark, thanks as always for your time. Great having you on this weekend show. I hope everybody enjoyed this weekend show. As always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email. That is fleck@kereport.com and chad@kereport.com. Everybody, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.